Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. To me, the crisp beginning of winter is full of hope and excitement, and I never feel that more strongly than when I'm out skating with my family on a pond or wetland in the late fall. As the weather gets colder, the fun of pond skating cannot be far off. On today's show, with four interviews, we're exploring outdoor skating opportunities in our region. Ice hockey may be a year-round sport for competitors, but pond hockey happens only when the weather permits. And that's even more true of the very Alaskan sport of backcountry skating, which may happen only for a few special weeks in the fall, and some years doesn't happen at all when the snow comes early. I have four guests to talk about fun kids skating on outdoor rinks, long track speed skating outdoors at Cuddy Park, backcountry skating, and finally picking skates for recreation. Stay tuned for the joy of outdoor skating, the ease of getting into the sport, and the amazing opportunities it creates to love winter. Well, with me right now is John Monroe, who's the program coordinator for the Anchorage Skate Club. If you haven't heard of this club, it hasn't been around all that long, but it's got a really great mission of getting kids active in skating, including kids who might not necessarily go skating with their parents, or might not be something that they would automatically have done, who are from, maybe from underserved communities. And John, my guest, is a speed skating coach who has coached national and Olympic teams, and obviously is able to teach skating at a very high level. But you're part of this. You're not doing that in this particular setting. Here, you're trying to teach kids just to skate for the first time, right?
Yeah, and teaching really just how much fun it is to be outdoors. One of the things that's important for everyone to understand is that all of our skating programs are outdoors. We don't do anything in Ben Boki or any of the indoor rinks. It's our fundamental focus is getting kids outside.
I love outdoor skating. And you have some history with what we call in this country pond hockey, but I guess they have a different name for it in Canada. What do they call it?
Well, I think when you organize it, you call it pond hockey. And when kids play it, it's shinny, at least in Canada. And, you know, that's kind of the vision that I think in some ways informs the Anchorage Skate Club's mission. Its founder, Edwin Blair, grew up playing outdoor hockey in Anchorage, and obviously that, you know, skating outdoors, that's just what you did. And, you know, when you see a city where almost half of the elementary schools have ice rinks, kids should be outside, kids should be skating. It's the cheapest outdoor recreation in the winter we're going to have.
And if you think about it, it's kind of like the tradition, which I don't know if it exists anymore at all, of sort of the pickup baseball game where kids just get together, let's play baseball, or the street hockey game. Yeah, let's play. But we live in a place where you can play hockey on the ice. Let's get out there and use these public rinks. You don't need to organize. Just get your friends together and go do it.
Yeah, and just the fundamentals of skating, whether you go out to play pond hockey with your friends or just, you know, there's a game going on at lunchtime down at Mulcahy Rinks or whatever. It's the getting outdoors and getting skating. It's, you know, a sport that just in general, fundamental skills that go with any other sport. And again, you know, we have a significant sort of challenge with kids' health in this state and the country in general. And for us, the biggest challenge when you look around is not so much summer, it's in the winter.
Yep. Kids sitting inside and being on the computer instead of getting outside in the beautiful 20-degree day, which we hope we'll get plenty of this winter.
Yep.
So tell me about the skate club and exactly what your programs are. You have programs where you are getting kids out, and how does that work?
Well, we have a number of different programs. The largest overall group has been the after-school programs, which we do in both Title I schools and in regular elementary.
Title I being the underprivileged school.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. And that one is, the Title I program is slightly different in that there's some funding of it that's brought to us for that. But the after-school program has been going since about 2011, 2012 at a number of elementary schools, basically funded by small user fees that the kids' parents will pay. It's a short three-week program. It's easy for the kids to get involved in. The schools basically are there as soon as the kids get off. They're at dismissal at 3:30. Skates go on, helmets go on, and, you know, mitts go on and out the door and skate with an instructor for an hour. And the focus is really on, you know, both instructional, but also on just getting out and skating and having fun.
So you're teaching them to skate for the first time, possibly?
In some cases, we don't limit the program to kids who have skated or who have not skated. It's, you know, part of the challenge we give our instructors is, you know, you get to make sure that every kid has a great experience doing this. And if you're, you know, willing to work at that, it's not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a challenge, but it's also, I think, important for kids to recognize that it's okay to be in a group where maybe you're the worst skater.
Yeah.
You know, and you can still have fun doing that.
I've taught a lot of kids to skate. It can be a frustrating task, but it doesn't necessarily take that long if the kid wants to learn.
Well, and also I think people, when you're teaching skating, it's a little like how a lot of us learn to drive. Most of us learn from our parents,
right.
And that isn't always the best
way.
Boy,
is that true.
You know,
it's the worst way to learn.
It explains a lot. But we focus on basically three things. The first is skating should not be scary. And we avoid that by basically teaching kids, the first thing we do is how to get up from having fallen,
mm-hmm.
Which is a little kind of reversed from the way a lot of people do it. They teach, don't fall.
Right.
We just say, you're going to fall.
You're going to fall.
Here's right. how you, d- it's not that big a deal. Everyone does it. It's not that scary. Here's how you deal with it. The second thing is we focus on getting kids to have a correct stance. And one of the things we emphasize is outdoor skating is not indoor skating. It's not perfect ice. Often there's, you know, patches of frost or snow on the ice. So we stress getting your knees, getting your weight forward a little bit so that you really have solid ankles and are stable, because outdoor ice presents challenges that you might not have in, again, skating indoors.
Right.
We feel that's
you're going to hit
thing.
Imperfections, and you need to be prepared with your body low
exactly.
and center of gravity low.
And I mean, you end up in what essentially is called an athletic stance, which mm-hmm. is true of virtually every other sport that
which you
see.
Need for downhill skiing or
any number
all
of
kinds of sports.
Football, you know, you name it, athletic stance is fundamental. And the third thing is that it's about, you know, it's not a competitive thing. We don't do levels in the sense of, you know, the figure skating programs, which are some of which are very good. It's about teaching skills and getting kids to develop quickly, but at a rate that works for them.
So I think one of the things that I think is a great discovery that some folks have made in Anchorage, maybe they made it a lot of places about our winter sports, is that you need to have fun, non-competitive stuff for younger kids. It's not all about being on a team and winning. Junior Nordic is like, hey, just get out and ski and have fun. And kids want to go back because a lot of kids don't necessarily want to be competitive.
Yeah, and even if, you know, if you point to Junior Nordic as a good example, I mean, I think that is one of the best thought out and structured programs in the country for keeping kids and getting kids involved.
Mm-hmm.
What's important to remember is that they've taken the approach that the Southern California speed skating program took, which is kids are going to come and kids will go, and not trying to hang on to kids desperately. Make sure it's fun. Make sure they enjoy it. Their mission is skiing for life. Our mission is essentially skating
right.
for
Give
life.
Give them a lifelong skill.
You know,
yes.
If you can skate in this state, you have something to do literally until you are unable to walk.
Every weekend in the winter, for sure, especially now that we have these great ponds that are groomed down at Westchester Lagoon and Cheney Lake, and we're going to be talking elsewhere in the show about even backcountry skating and the way amazing outdoor skating opportunities that we have. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and I'm speaking with John Monroe, who's with the Anchorage Skate Club. You mentioned the Los Angeles program that was, I believe, founded by Sue Perlis, who's now the head of our Girl Scouts in Anchorage, your spouse. And that program produced some major skaters who we've seen on TV, right? And it started out as just helping underprivileged kids skate.
Yeah, and it was fortunate that they started with some funding from a foundation that was based on the concept of just getting kids involved in sports in that particular area. So that concept is a little different than the, you know, immediately being competitive. Kids are competitive by nature.
If they want to go that direction, they will.
You know,
yeah.
But you have to provide an environment where it's part of a range of activities. Mm-hmm. And if you see, you know, the number of kids that leave sports or a particular sport, you know, number one on the list of reasons is almost always it wasn't fun. And if you look hard, most kids are perfectly happy to be competitive, but without necessarily the pressure that you know, the adults somehow, without meaning to, that we hope, bring to the equation.
And when you say that kids are competitive, it's so true, but in often a very flexible way. So you're on skates, you're on a rink, let's play tag, right? Yeah. And then that goes on for 10 minutes, and you say, well, let's have a race.
Yeah.
It's not like everybody do you know, what the grown-ups want us to do.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the discussions you hear a lot in the kind of the world of kids' sports is, you know, the loss of what's called unstructured play.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, you know, when we do our programs, we certainly have to have structure for safety reasons and, you know, for instructional effectiveness. But we also make sure that there's lots of unstructured play in there where kids can just skate and have fun and enjoy being outdoors after school instead of immediately going home or, you know, or what have you.
So how do you how do parents who are listening and say, I want my kid to be involved in this program, how do they do it? Do they have to pay a fee?
Well, the after-school program is one of the programs we do. It's not the only one. We also do a speed skating program that's based at the Cuddy Park Oval, which, of course, is one of only six speed skating ovals in the entire country. And we also provide programs. We do some work with Campfire, and we're looking at also expanding our programs to some PTAs and programs at some of the other school ranks at times other than the after-school. But the after-school programs are basically organized through the school specifically.
Okay.
So the school secretary or the principal will arrange for the forums to go out to the schools, and we normally encourage the schools to, you know, help fill the class so that we can help fund it. And so any parent that's involved is always welcome to go to our website and, you know, or send us an email or give us a call and find out about programs. One of the challenges for us is that we doubled the number of kids we served last year. So we've been, you know, adding programs left, right, and center. And,
right.
I mean, that's a nice problem to have.
A lot for a volunteer group to do.
As you know, as program director, it's a nicer problem for other people than it is for me. But it's a good problem to have.
It's always amazing to me to see how things are growing and kind of exploding in Anchorage with all the different groups, different sports-related things, and especially working with kids. There's a lot of opportunities, and this is a wonderful one to get your kid to learn to skate in an unstructured, fun way. Do you provide the skates? Do you provide the gear? Do parents need to go out and buy that stuff?
Depends a little bit. A lot of the schools, particularly Title I's, they have skates for the kids to use. We have quite a number of skates, and we're actually in the process of getting a fleet of our own.
Mm-hmm.
Fully. We've kind of been, you know, hounding Craigslist for the last year to buy every pair of small skates that shows up.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of people have donated skates, which is always good. The majority of the...
I'll talk to you after the show.
The majority of the non-Title I schools, most of the kids seem to have their own skates. Whereas the Title I schools, far fewer have their own skates. So it's really been through the schools have been very supportive, and helmets. And we always provide, we have a mandatory helmet rule for all the kids. And it's just common sense to have that. But that's really, you know, very straightforward. And kids are, you know, quite happy skating in anything they can get their hands on, so to speak. But we also encourage parents, if they're going to buy skates, to think a little bit about what's going to make it fun for the kids. Don't just buy figure skates because mom figure skated.
Because that's what you had, right?
Hockey skates because dad used to play hockey. You know, we recommend if parents are buying skates to buy some of the newer designed what are called soft boot skates,
mm-hmm.
Which you can buy in a number of places.
They're fantastic.
And online. And a lot of the smaller sizes are adjustable. So for kids, those are very useful.
And they're not that expensive. And if your memory of skating as a kid is your feet hurting, that doesn't have to be the case anymore.
No. And the other bonus we've kind of discovered more by chance than deliberately thinking about it is that most of those skates are also quite a bit warmer.
Yeah.
Relative to the skates that, you know, you and I grew up skating in.
Yeah. I imagine that you are in the same kind of weather situation as the skiers are, because you're talking about outdoor skating, and if it's rainy, that doesn't work too well.
Well, it just depends if the you know, if the temperature
you can skate more than
low,
we can ski.
And you know, I've got a lot of friends who are skiers, and the moaning and weeping for a couple of years there, the first couple of years I was in the city, was something to behold. And what you need to remember is that generally, even if it doesn't snow, it's going to be cold enough virtually the entire winter to skate in Anchorage.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks, John, for doing this. This is a wonderful thing to know that is going on, and I know that a lot of our listeners are going to want to take advantage of it. You can find the link for the Anchorage Skate Club by going to our website, outdoorexplorer.org, and in the rest of the hour, you're going to learn a lot more about skating. We have four guests today to talk about different aspects of it, including equipment, speed skating, backcountry skating, and this is a great topic for getting kids started in skating in the first place. So thanks for being with us, John Monroe from Anchorage Skate Club.
Thank you.
Please stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues. Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and we are talking about outdoor skating today. Many different forms of this sport, and one of them that has really gained popularity in Anchorage in the last 5 years or so is speed skating. It's one of those sports that, you know, you've watched on the Olympics for years and years and years, and it seems so exotic and kind of never hear anything about it other than during the Olympics. But we, you know, there's folks doing it here in Anchorage, and you can go out and try it, and it's pretty fun, and it's pretty. It's one of those sports that takes a lot of skill and practice to be really good at. But if you know how to skate, you can do it from day one. So there's some big advantages there. And I've got the vice president of the Anchorage Speed Skating Club with me, Chuck Gilbert. Thanks for coming in, Chuck.
Hey, thanks for calling me in.
So. What is the I always like to find out, what is the sort of pleasure or the joy of a sport, of an activity, and what makes you want to really practice it and get good at it? And speed skating, you've been doing it for like quite a while, right? About 30 years?
Yeah, I began about 30 years ago and knocked off for a while, but started up again about 8 years ago.
Uh-huh. So what is it, what's the feel of it, or what is it that keeps you coming back to it?
Well, you're outdoors, and when our oval here in Anchorage, it's a beautiful place to be. You see the Chugach Mountains in the background. But in itself, it's really a graceful sport.
Yeah.
It's very smooth. It's almost zen-like when you get into a groove, and it's also challenging. You have to figure out the technique, and you work on the technique, so you always got something going on. But, you know, it is a matter of going, in the case of Anchorage here, going around the oval. It is an oval, so it's going around and around. So it's repetitive, but it's kind of the simplicity of it is kind of attractive.
Yeah.
And then learning that technique and practicing getting your leg stroke right or getting your body position correct. And you can feel this. You can feel the speed kind of pick up and feel it become easier all the time as you get better at it.
And you go really fast.
Yeah, the fastest speed skaters go up to 37 miles an hour. I don't go quite that fast myself. I probably top out at 20 or something like that.
But that's still, I mean, that's like faster than it could run probably. I mean, you're right. Just zipping along.
Yeah, it's very quick.
And with this smooth, effortless feel, you're not pounding.
Right, it's very non-impacting unless you fall. But even falling, if you're in the proper position, actually low down, when you fall, you just kind of skid along, so you don't really get hurt. So yeah, it's a very non-impactful sport, and you know, like I say, kind of very graceful and very pleasurable to do.
I would think great for fitness as well.
Oh yeah, it's hugely great for fitness. I mean, you can go as hard or as easy as you want, but if you go for long periods at a moderate pace, you're going to build up your fitness really well. And if you do intervals, you know, you build it up that much more. So, so for fitness, it's incredible.
Yeah. So here in Anchorage, we have this oval that was built in the Cuddy Family Park in Midtown, which I'm sure hopefully everybody knows where that is, but between 36 and Tudor and east of A Street. And it's a really lovely spot. I mean, I suppose people speed skating in other parts of the country are probably indoors, which might get a little boring, but when you're out in such a pretty place, it's really must be fun. And I've been out there, you can go out at night too. I've been out there under the lights.
Yeah, the lights got put in about 3 years ago, so you can go out all all the time. I think the lights go off at 11 p.m. But but it's really beautiful. Even at night with the lights on, you can still see the mountains, and it's a great place to be. And it's really a matter of having the oval discovered. Most people didn't know where it was. Most people didn't even know where the park was. So we got the Muni to put up a sign on C and A Street to point out that, hey, there's a skating oval right to your right. Just come over and check it out. Trying to just to publicize and get people to learn about it. And it's picked up a lot over the past couple of years.
So is it, I mean, when I've gone out there, I've never paid anything. I just sort of go and skate. Somebody's paying for it.
It actually costs some money to lay the ice down. So the city lets a contract with Alpine Services, and they lay the ice down as quickly as they can once winter comes on. So it's usually about the end of November when the ice gets laid down. And then they maintain it throughout the winter. They mop it three times a week on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. And it costs some money. So I don't know quite what the current contract is, but I think around $18,000 a year to do it. So, but it's free to the public to go out and do it. We do have a little way to raise some money because Anchorage Skates, which is an organization that got together to really get the oval put in place, to get it constructed, donates $10,000 a year to the Muni to help defray the cost of maintenance.
Nice.
So we sell these cool little oval pins for $15 to people out skating or just let them know about it with signs, and they can buy them from any club member or Alaska Mountaineering Hiking. But the $15 per pin, nice little pin, helps defray some of the cost of putting the ice down.
Boy, that's a good deal. I mean, that's like one session at a rink, right?
Right. Yeah. It's very inexpensive.
Yeah. Cool. So you use different skates, and you've brought a pair of them in, and they look really, really different. Tell us about the skates you use, and go ahead and pick them up. I don't know if we'll be able to hear them.
Probably don't. Well, I'll go ahead and pick them up because they do make a noise, actually.
Yeah.
So these are, for speed skates, the way they used to be, they'd be a fixed blade on a boot, and the boot is almost like a slipper. It's not like a ski boot that comes up around your ankles. And that's because
it's very low, low profile.
Yeah. Right? So it's just like a running shoe almost. Uh-huh. But that's because the motion for speed skating is very regular. It's not like basketball where you're stopping and starting.
Hockey where you need a lot of ankle support.
Yeah. Right, where you're doing quick stops and starts. When you're speed skating, you just go. So you don't need a whole lot of ankle support. So the speed skates used to be fixed, where the blade was fixed to the boot. And they still make that type. You can still use them. But there a kind of skate was developed in the 90s where it's called a clapping blade. And the blade actually, I'll just clap it here. So the blade actually pivots at the toe, and it comes off the heel and goes down. So the reason for that is when you're doing the last push off, when you're doing your stroke, you do a whole complete stroke. But as you're finishing the stroke, you can keep the blade on the ice longer because you come up on your toe, and instead of raising the blade off the blade stays in the ice and gives you a little bit more push, a little bit more speed. So they make a bunch of different companies make them. This one is made in Canada, but there's like 10 different companies that make speed skates, both fixed speed skates and clapping speed skates.
Do you have to order them? Because I assume there's not a huge number of people buying them any particular day.
Yeah, in Anchorage, it's not a big demand, so nobody in Anchorage sells them. But there are companies around the country that do. There's one in Salt Lake, and there's one in Boston, and a few others in Canada and elsewhere you can buy them.
How much does a pair of speed skates cost?
Well, I was thinking about that as I thought about the show.
You probably haven't bought a pair in a long time. Huh?
Well, I bought this pair about 3 years ago. So you can spend anywhere from about $300, and that includes the boot and the blade. That'd be a very inexpensive pair. Or if you go crazy, you can spend a couple thousand.
Right.
These ones right here cost about $800.
Maybe if you're Apollo Ono, you do that. But
for those being in the Olympics, you might want to go a little harder, or spend a little bit more money.
Yeah.
But for about $600 or so, you can get a pretty nice pair of boots and blades.
So, but you don't need that to try it out, right? I mean, I guess let me ask you this. The Nordic skate, which is, we're going to hear more about later in the show, which is sort of the backcountry skate, also long blade, also straight blade, also articulated off the toe like that one is.
Right.
But lighter weight maybe? What's the difference? And could you kind of get a sense of speed skating using a Nordic skate?
You can. It's pretty similar, really, because like you say, it comes off the toe. And it's a long blade, just like this is a long blade. So one thing about these blades is they're, like this one I have here in front of me is 17 inches, which is a lot longer than a hockey skate or a figure skate. So that's to give more push off the ice, more contact with the ice surface. But Nordic blades are pretty similar in the way they function. Speed skates are a little bit better. They're a little higher off the ice, so you can actually turn a little sharper. With Nordic blades, if you turned really sharp, your side of your boot might bump the ice and knock your blade off the ice. Mm-hmm. So that's one downside of
they don't have blades. That same horizontal sort of rigidity that you've got in the sort of a heavy duty kind of metal part on the bottom of that skate.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they stay on the boot quite well, but speed skates are just a little bit better for the turns and just getting better push off.
Yeah, neat. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about speed skating today. We're talking about all outdoor skating in this segment, speed skating, with Chuck Gilbert, who's with the Alaska Speed Skating Club. My name is Charles Wolforth. I assume you're trying to build the sport, get more interest in it. It is definitely a niche sport, but a perfect sport for Alaska. You know, because we have an oval, and there aren't many of those around.
No, there aren't. We're really lucky to have the oval. It's a beautiful facility. It got built about 8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And like we've been talking about, it's in a great spot, and it's maintained well. So it's good ice on it almost all the time. So, yeah, we are growing the sport of speed skating. It's kind of been around in Anchorage for a long time. And actually, in the 60s and early 70s, it was a high school sport.
Really?
Which I only learned about a little while ago, but it was actually a high school sport. And then it kind of dropped off in popularity for whatever reason.
The pet peeve of mine, like, why shouldn't speed skating be a high school sport? But we do some other sports that seem like almost totally inappropriate to Alaska mm-hmm. because the season is so short. It's right. difficult to play. But
right.
yeah.
Yeah, so we're growing the club. Our club does both skate at the oval, which is called long track speed skating. The oval is 400 meters. And so it's like a running track that's iced over. There's also short track speed skating, which our club does too, which is, we're not going to talk about that because that's indoor skating.
Right.
but that's done currently at the Subway Center.
That's the demolition derby version, at least when you watch it on TV.
Yeah, it's like roller derby. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit, it's shorter. Instead of being 400 meters, it's 111 meters. So it's more turning and it's done in packs. And so that's another style of speed skating that we get into.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are you doing to grow the sport? Are you having lessons or introducing people to it? How are you going about that?
Well, we're publicizing, and this show should help a little bit.
Right? Yeah, we hope.
and we have notices up around town. We have a Facebook page. We have a website. We go to different events like the cross country, the NSAA, the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage has an annual meeting. So we're always there showing people about speed skates because there's a great crossover between cross country skiing, especially skate skiing.
Skate skiing and speed skating have a lot in common.
Speed skating have a lot in common. So we find that those people who are good cross country skiers, especially skate skiers, take really naturally to it.
And there's been a race that they've done. I don't know if they're still doing it, where it's a half skiing, half skating. Jump out of your skis
right.
into your skates.
Yeah, we do that once a year. It's usually done the first part of January, and it's a speed skating event to begin with, a 5K speed skating event, which is about 12 and a half laps around the speed skating oval, and then 5K of cross country skiing. So we've been doing that every year. It's one of our most popular events, and we get a lot of good cross country skiers and average or other cross country skiers doing it, but uh-huh. it's quite popular. This year we're not going to do it because the Ski Nationals are occurring at Kincaid
right.
that first week of January,
people
which is when we usually
busy.
Do it.
Yeah.
So we don't expect to see too many cross country skiers show up for the duathlon this year. So we're not going to have it this year.
Are there opportunities for people to get introduced to this sport for the first time and to sort of, because as we were saying, and I want to get more into it in a minute. There's a lot of technique involved. It's not. I mean, you can just be a recreational skater and skate as fast as you can, but you're not really speed skating.
Right. Yeah, so there are good opportunities to get into it. We're going to be doing, once winter comes and the oval gets iced over, which is usually about the end of November, and then it's ice is down for about 3 months, depending on the weather. But once that occurs, we'll be doing practices two times a week on Thursday evenings at 6 to 7, and then Sundays from 1 to 3. And we'll have coaches there for those sessions. So anybody new who wants to show up or anybody who's done it before wants to show up, they can come and skate with the group and get some coaching as well. So it's a good opportunity to get involved. And otherwise, we're currently skating indoors until winter comes at Subway. So you can go out there and learn how to speed skate as well.
So same time frame?
We're doing it Tuesday evenings then instead of Thursday evenings and on Saturday mornings.
And I'm sure that's on your website.
It is. So if you look at our website, which is alaskaspeedskating.com, there's a calendar there which shows all of that.
Cool. And we'll have that on outdoorexplorer.org where we sort of have all the different links accumulated so you can find everything we're talking about today. So I think everyone has seen on TV this bent over posture and the hands behind the back, and it looks odd. It looks like, and you see these huge thighs, you know, mm-hmm. and it looks like it must work. Why is that? Why is all that done? Why is that technique important, and how does it work exactly?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, we had Beth Hayden in town for a cross-country ski race, and she and her brother Eric Hayden were incredibly famous and Olympic champion
they're
speed skaters.
Became huge celebrities in town, like quite a while ago, though.
Right, that was in the 70s when they had the Olympic golds. She came to town about 5 years ago and put on a speed skating class at the Oval. And a lot of people showed up, like 50 or 75 people showed up for that class based on her celebrity status. But she started off by saying, you know, she put people on the ice and said, here's what you should do. You've got to bend your knees and pretty much put your hands on the ice, be able to touch the ice with your hands as you skate along. That is like the perfect position. So you're really well bent over to do it. Both bending your knees primarily, but bending your back too to get your back reasonably flat toward the ice. But the reason for that is that when your leg is bent so much like that, it's like a piston. If your leg is straight, there's not much stroke on the piston. If your leg is really well bent, when you straighten it out, there's a lot of distance. So all that distance is when the skate is pushing on the ice, and that's what creates the speed. So that really extreme bent over position produces a lot of potential to put pressure on the ice, and that's where the speed comes from.
Interesting, because I'm just hearing this for the first time, and it strikes me as such a contrast to skate skiing, where you're really trying to generate momentum through moving your body center of gravity, a body shift from ski to ski, and not necessarily pushing off so much with strength. And in speed skating, it sounds like it's all about the muscle and the leg.
Yeah, it really is. There's some core muscle, too, that's going on, but mainly it's that leg muscle, and that's why...
And the body is fairly stable, in contrast.
The body is pretty stable, so it doesn't move that much. You're kind of falling from side to side, but that gives you the ability to kind of, as you fall to the left, you can push off the right skate, and mm-hmm. vice versa. But it is a more stable position, and there's a reason why Eric Hayden had those huge thighs, because, I mean, he was naturally suited to the sport. Yeah. He had big thighs and the power in his legs to make the speed.
So the muscle is coming from maybe your glutes and your thighs, not so much from your lower leg.
Right.
So that position looks like it would be really tiring to hold, and especially for like an older person, your back, and you'd get weary of being in that position.
This is true. You do. And people, the competitive speed skaters train, they put weights on their necks and bend over and to strengthen their lower back muscles. But as you do it, even as a somewhat older person like myself, your back gets strengthened and you can hold it longer. Still, in doing some of the races, we did long races too, do marathon races, which are 25K or some people do 50K.
Wow.
You can't hold that low position the whole time. So what you find is, especially if the wind is blowing, say blowing out of the north like it usually does, people get really low going into the wind to reduce their wind resistance, but then they stand up going south and feel like kind of a sail if the wind is strong enough. But it gives a chance to relax your back muscles a little bit. Then you tuck again when you go back into the wind.
Is this one of those sports where you... you make tiny adjustments that are almost imperceptible, and then you suddenly say, oh, I'm going a little bit faster. And you can, and so that even when you're doing it for many, many years, you can still get better.
Yeah, I think there's like continual improvement. Sometimes it's by leaps and bounds, sometimes really small, but you can feel it. It's really nice to be able to get a little coaching and pick up a few things which you're not aware of yourself, but you've been are pointed out to by a coach, and you can work on those things and you can just feel it get easier and get better and faster.
Yeah, and then you get, if it's like, I'm thinking about skiing, you certainly get this mind-body connection that gets more and more attuned, and that feels really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you begin to kind of fall into a groove, and it just feels right after a while.
You get a little bit of a zen, and you forget that you're out there, and maybe, you know, oh, wow, half an hour's gone by.
Right, yeah, being out there for an hour and skating around, you sometimes I'll find myself saying, well, maybe just one more lap. I just want to do one more before dinner.
Yeah, right, right. Well, it sounds great, and I it seems like something that would be wonderful to get more people involved in and more kids involved in, because it's an Alaska thing. We have this facility. We have a group. You can learn to do it. You know, there's sort of no barrier to taking on this new sport and really getting great fitness and doing something totally different. You know, like runners should be doing it. It's much more fun than running on ice in the wintertime.
Yeah, it used to be that speed skating and cycling were kind of crossover sports.
Yeah.
Because it used to be that ovals were all outdoors, and there aren't very many outdoor ovals like ours here. So most ovals now are indoors, and people can speed skate all year long. But they used to cross over between cycling and speed skating. So speed skate in the winter and then cycle in the summer. But now you can speed skate all year long. And, of course, now you can cycle all year long, too, with fat tire bikes. So there's not as much crossover. But I think it's really a great opportunity for somebody to switch around between sports, especially, like, leg sports, and increase your leg strength.
And just enjoy life, because this is a great place to live in the winter if you do outdoor sports like skating.
Yeah, I live right downtown, and it's really such a treat just to run out to the oval, which takes me about 4 minutes to get out there and be on the ice. Yeah. And there's no ticket to buy or anything. Yeah. You're out there and you can skate as long as you want.
That's taking advantage of living here. Yes. Thank you, Chuck Gilbert, Vice President of the Alaska Speed Skating Club. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for calling us in.
Yeah. And we're going to continue. We're going to talk about backcountry skating next and recreational skates, what skates to choose. Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and today we are talking about outdoor skating, and there's so many great aspects to this topic. So many ways you can use your skates, and perhaps the most Alaskan and unique and outdoorsy way of all is backcountry skating, where you head out on lakes and wetlands and even rivers and explore on your skates so that you're using ice skates as a way to cross the great wilderness of Alaska. And it is really, really, really fun. And there's some special equipment for it that makes it particularly easy and work well. And so right now I've got Ingrid Eng with me. She works at Alaska Mountaineering and Hiking, where they sell the Nordic skates, probably the only place in town that sells them, but we're not sure about that, but probably. And Ingrid is also an avid backcountry skater herself. And Ingrid, I wanted to just let people know what this is all about. You know, I kind of think of the Joni Mitchell song, If I Had a River to Skate On, and that's kind of skate away on. And I've, you know, Potter's Marsh is kind of like in-between version of it. It's kind of, but then if you head out to like the Nancy Lake system or Big Lake, or the slough out by
Jim Creek.
Yeah. I mean, there's really big places to explore.
Yeah, there's a lot of places to explore. And I guess the limitations are what the ice is like and, you know, how far the river goes, more or less. If there's overflow, that can hinder you in a certain way. But that's all part of the bushwhacking adventure in Alaska.
Well, part of the magic of this is that the sense of freedom you have, because skating is so fast. I mean, it's faster than cross-country skiing. You can just fly, and so you feel like you're going super fast. You're probably in a spot that nobody else has actually skated in that particular spot, and then it's really beautiful because, I mean, you're doing it usually in the fall time, and you can see down into the ice. I mean, what are some of your favorite memories of backcountry skating?
I think, you know, getting out by Jim Creek, where you have the backdrop of Pioneer Peak and looking out towards the Kinnick, that's really beautiful. The ice freezes up kind of in luge styles out there, so you can travel like a maze style through them, and it may end on you and you have to turn around and go back. But going out there with friends and taking some cider with you and enjoying the time is really fun.
Yeah, it feels like so like healthy and unique and special when you're doing this. And probably it's sort of during a special window of time when the snow hasn't really, I mean, if there's a lot of snow, it's not going to work.
Yeah, it is. And you have to watch out pretty hard for that window of time. You know, as it's getting colder, it's like amping up for it, I feel like. But it's before the snow flies, the ice freezes up, and it's very short window. It usually ends up being a few weeks, but I think last year it was close to at least a month that we had to get out there and skate.
Yeah. And you were mentioning that Big Lake was amazing last year. I mean, Big Lake is a big body of water. Were you able to skate side to side?
We skated the whole perimeter, and
wow.
There's also a slough that we made it up, and there were areas that springs come in, so you had to watch out for those.
Mm-hmm.
And a good thing to take with you is those ice claws, so that if you were to fall in, then you'd be able to get back out. That's a little bit of a danger out skating on big bodies of water like that. But
I think that's what everybody's sort of terror of. Is probably, I bet it's the biggest thing that keeps somebody from doing it who wants to. And I know I've run into spots where I've had a bit of a scare where there's overflow, you know, and you fall through a thin skim into some overflow, or where you're sort of skating along and you realize, I wonder what that's like, and then you can sort of see the ice moving a little bit because you're at the beginning of the season.
But yeah, you're kind of testing it out at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and you're probably way off in the wilderness. I mean, I guess rule one would be don't go by yourself, obviously.
Yeah, don't go by yourself. Wear a helmet in case you slide backwards and fall down. That way you're not hitting your head. The ice claws are a nice addition to have.
Are those something you can buy, or is that something you make?
They are. You can buy them or you can make them. AMH sells them. I think there's a couple other places in town that sell them as well, but they're just these little spikes so that if you fall into the water, you're able to have some purchase to claw your way back out.
Right, because it's hard. I've never fallen through the ice, but I've heard from elders that if you can get your body flat and sort of roll onto the ice rather than trying to climb a ladder, you're going to have much better success in getting out.
Yeah, I fell in actually one year, and that's exactly what I did. I didn't have the ice claws with me, and I was able to kind of get flat on the ice and roll out, and everything was fine. But
that sounds like a close to the scariest thing that could happen to you.
It was scary. Luckily, it was out on Potter's Marsh, but there's a lot of spring-fed areas through there, so that's like another area that you would have to be a little bit aware of. I think being aware of your environment ends up being pretty key in it.
Right. You want to tear along, but sort of be thinking about the risks, and that's always the case. And also being ready for eventualities is always the case when you're outdoors in Alaska. So you need to maybe have some backpack with some dry clothes and you know, snacks and that kind of thing.
Yeah, dry clothes, snacks. I think I like to bring a little pocket rocket, which is a little stove that you can fire up if you need to, or, you know, fire it up and make coffee while you're out there skating.
Yeah.
That makes it pretty fun as well.
That's part of this whole aesthetic of it, where you can stop and, like you're saying, have a cup of hot chocolate, and it's brilliantly sunny because it's not so dark that time of year yet, and it's like really nice. Yeah.
Yeah, and on those bluebird days, like when it's real sunny and you're out there, just the ice crystals just glow off of everything.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And if you want to try it on Potter's Marsh, as Ingrid said, there are spots where there are springs, and there are spots where there's thin ice. But for the most part, the water's really shallow out there.
Yeah, it's really
shallow.
And
so it's a really good place to try this for the first time. And one thing you'll notice on Potter's Marsh, and I've noticed on many other lakes, is that you can even get sort of a sense of vertigo when the ice is very clear, because you can see way down below you and even sometimes see fish and leaves and bubbles and all kinds of stuff down there, and it looks like you're floating through the air.
Yeah, we've seen like fish kind of suspended in the ice before, beetles frozen into the ice. Just, you come across some bizarre things. Did you catch the ADN article, I think from last year, that had a truck that somebody came upon in Jim Creek back there? Yeah.
Wow.
If you should check that out if you haven't checked it out. It's really cool, too. They have a video of folks skating back there, and it just gives you a real good feel of what it's like.
We'll find that and link it on outdoorexplorer.org so that you can get some of those images. I've also had some very magical experiences on the Nancy Lake system early season, where you can sort of hear the ice freezing, or hear sort of this weird sound, metallic sound that sort of goes out across the ice, and the ice roses sometimes will grow, where you get these big crystals that grow up around the ice. And it's sort of if you're used to being outdoors in the summer or the winter, this fall time when it's frozen but no snow, it's got a whole special different world that you may not be accustomed to.
Yeah, it's a very different world. It's almost like little ice flowers. That's what I've called them to my friends before. And then while you're taking those portages between the lakes, you get the stalks of grasses that just fill with hoarfrost. And that's really beautiful as well.
Yeah, that Nancy Lake system is another great place to start. And we did a show on that in the past, a year or two ago, and we can link to that as well, because that's an opportunity to do a multi-day trip where you can stay in one of those state park cabins.
Yeah.
And you really don't have to, actually, on skates. Like, if you're canoeing, you'd probably want a couple of days. But on skates, you can do the whole thing in a few hours because you go so fast. But it's really fun to get out there and use a cabin. And I suppose there are probably other places like that that I'm not even thinking of.
I think there's some, there's a Swanson canoe system down south. I haven't gotten a chance to check that out, but that seems like that would be really fun as well.
Really, to penetrate deep into those lakes that are off the road. Yeah. That would be cool. I wonder if there's folks who have done that who could contact me. we do have a Facebook page on just check out Outdoor Explorer, and we'd love to hear from you about that. We're talking today about outdoor skating and many different aspects of it. In this segment, talking with Ingrid Ng, who is works at AMH, Alaska Mountaineering and Hiking, about her experiences backcountry skating. And my name is Charles Wolforth. And Ingrid, I know that you guys sell the Nordic skates, and they're really well adapted for doing this because they are, you can clip them on and off, right?
Yep, they're great. They come on and off really easy.
Tell people what they're like if they haven't seen them.
So they're a long blade. They're between 40 and 55 centimeters. Depending on if you're a kid, you can get them in like a 40 centimeter. If you're a tall adult, 55. They're really easy to click on and off, and they snap into your ski boots, your skate ski boots, preferably because of the ankle support that you get with them. Mm-hmm. And just make it really easy if you need to get off out of them real quick and portage through an area, or if you're putting them on, you're sitting on a bench and just snap them in. You're not playing as much of the balance game, I think, that you can get sometimes with putting on skates.
Yeah. Which I've done when you've got to put them hockey skates on and off again.
That
gets old. And the other thing about them is that they've got, it seems like the angle on the front of the skate is very low. So if you hit an obstacle,
it runs right through it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can go through rough, kind of like more abrasive ice, I feel like, with them compared to a hockey skate. And the blade on them is a little bit wider as well. So it's going to cut on the ice a little bit nicer.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the length, you're also going to go fairly fast with them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're on hockey skates and you're with somebody on Nordic skates, you better be a really good skater because it's really hard to keep up with them, right?
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of people will actually do backcountry skating with ski poles as well.
Yep.
Is that something you do?
Yeah, I've done that a little bit. I kind of prefer not having ski poles. Mm-hmm. I like to get down and touch the ice and play around, make snow angels. But ski poles are great when you're going a long distance.
Yeah, and maybe if you're carrying a load or something.
Or, if you have a heavier backpack
people
on as well.
People can go really, really fast on these things, and that's part of the fun is just the ability to zip through. So the skate, you're basically buying a blade and then presumably already have the cross-country ski boot and has some ability to balance and get sort of, it's a similar motion to cross-country skiing or skate skiing.
Yeah, it is. It's really similar. I feel like it's pretty easy to pick up if you've rollerbladed, ice skated, skate skied. All those things make it pretty easy to pick up, and you're in a warm boot, so that's also nice.
It's a big advantage.
Yeah, you're not playing the cold feet game the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like with the skate ski poles, I think I typically like to steer people away from doing that if they don't ski right away, because it just adds another thing into the equation.
Right.
And the great thing about Nordic skiing is like anybody can pick it up. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy.
Yeah. So, and then when you buy the skates, so essentially you're buying a metal blade and then you're buying a binding that will be then mounted onto the blade so that you can connect the boot to the blade.
Yep.
So what does that whole package cost? I know these are not like the most common Walmart items. This is a pretty specialized thing.
Yeah, it's pretty specialized. The skates are from Norway and Sweden, and they're running between like 160 $60 and right around $200. And then the bindings cost in the range of $50 to $80, $90.
Mm-hmm. And then and boots, which presumably you already have, but if you don't, then another $200.
Yeah, another $200.
So is it, can folks rent these if they want to just try it out before they buy?
They can, and we rent boots and skates, so you don't have to have either of those, which is great. And that's kind of what we encourage around the shop, if you haven't tried it before, to rent some, see if you like it, and then get out there and buy your own pair so that you can go on longer adventures.
Yeah, and then also just have some backcountry knowledge if you're going to be going out on ice and going long distances, and some preparation for if you fall through the ice and go with somebody. And those are sort of the basic safety things we'd say for almost any outdoor activity.
Yeah, let somebody know where you're going for the day as well. Mm-hmm. And a nice place to check them out and get a feel for them is at Westchester Lagoon or mm-hmm. Potter's Marsh. Those seem to freeze up kind of on par with everything else.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks so much, Ingrid. This has been fun. I love sharing this activity, which I find so fun and is sort of a less a secret now than it used to be, but it's still not all that well known that you can get out and have this much fun in the fall time.
Yeah, thank you. It's always exciting to talk about winter.
All right. Ingrid Eng from Alaska Mountaineering and Hiking. It's Outdoor Explorer. Stay with us as we continue talking about outdoor skating. Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and we're talking today about outdoor skating. It's this great, as you've heard, great aspect of recreation in Anchorage and, you know, all over Alaska for this time of year. And by this time of the show, if you don't have skates, you're probably wondering how you could participate, what kind of skates you need and how much all this costs. And so I'm talking to a longtime employee and associate of Champion's Choice, which is the skate and hockey store here in town that's been operating for generations. I think a lot of people know them, and Biz is with me, and he helps people pick out skates all day long. And I bet you guys are really coming into your busy season right now.
We are. You know, the season's starting to kick in a little bit. We've had some great weather. It's starting to cool off a little bit, so I'm kind of looking forward to the skating season coming up.
Yeah, it's really starting to look like it. So I know a lot of your customers are people who are involved in hockey and are competitors, and probably probably figure skaters too. But you also probably have some folks who come in who are just interested in recreation out on the lagoon or on Cheney Lake or in Potter's Marsh, and are sort of kind of just getting introduced to skating.
Yes, we do have some skates that do very well outside. Some skates have different materials, keep your feet warm, such as Thinsulate. And we have different types of and styles of actually blades that go with it. So we have figure skating blades with that type of a boot, or we have a hockey style blade that can go with that type of boot. And the boot is made for outdoor skating.
Yeah, so this is something that I wanted to highlight because people my age, which is in their 50s, might have this memory of skating being something you do and have uncomfortable feet, you know, because old skates, single layer of leather and just really stiff, and you get pretty tired. But the new skates are soft inside and they're pretty comfortable.
Yes, they are. A lot of the skates we have now too are made of different types of foams, and they do offer quite a bit of support and comfort as well. So that's been a big plus for us.
Yeah, and so if folks have maybe go out to the rink or out in the lake and see them, on the outside they kind of look like a modern sneaker. In other words, they're kind of nylon and soft on the outside rather than being leather.
They are, and you know, they still offer a lot of support, and several of them have kind of a quick lace in the front with the Velcro closure on the top, so it's easy to get off and onto. So if you walk out to the lake or if you're going to an outside rink, you could actually go there in your boots and quickly get into your skates.
That's another thing that if you grew up skating in Anchorage, you were like very used to like freezing cold fingers with those long, long laces and trying to tie them and everything. And I've seen some that even just have like a, I don't know if you have these, but that they're, and maybe these are just the lower quality ones that have kind of just a snap or something or just a Velcro pull around. I don't know if those work as well as actual laces.
You know, actually, you can get the closures on there. The Velcro works great, and especially with the smaller, like with kids, that works fantastic with the parents. So you can slip the feet into the boots really easy and then use that Velcro closure, and they're in and out of them right away, and they're enjoying it.
Right. So how much would you expect to pay for a new pair of skates of that sort of recreational class that we're talking about?
So our adult skates, they're going to run close to $100, and the junior skates, that I believe, start around $30.
That's actually kind of amazing. It's like a pair of running shoes cost you $100.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a bad deal. I mean, if you wanted to go into higher-end figure skates or hockey skates, then you're talking about, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars. I mean, the ones that folks are using for competitively are very, very much more expensive than that, right?
That is correct. Yes, a lot of your competitive boots are going to be made of leather and leather bottoms and especially blades. So those things all add up and make more expensive boots.
Yeah. So what are the keys to getting a skate to fit right? One of the choices I know is between a new and a used skate. I'm not sure, you know, I know with ski boots, sometimes you want to be really careful with used because they tend to kind of mold around a person's foot, and that no two people's feet are exactly the same. Do used skates have that same kind of issue where you really new is the better way to go?
You know, it varies. You know, we've got a great selection of used boots here, and it varies throughout the season. We do take trade-ins towards new boots, and so we put those used boots on our rack, and we do sell those skates. So we have a great variety of skates there. And as far as sizing goes, you know, that's just something we'll spend some time with the customer with and make sure they get the right size.
You just have to keep trying them on until you find one that's really comfortable.
Yes.
Is there any tricks about sizing with skates that are different from shoes? Back in the old days, skates tended to be very narrow, and I'm not sure if that's really a problem anymore with these new styles.
The new style recreational skates tend to run a little bit wider, and therefore they accommodate maybe a little bit thicker sock. We usually recommend one pair of socks, such as a Smartwool type sock, and that way you can wick out the moisture a lot easier that way, but you still get a good fit.
Right, so maybe come in with a pair of wool socks that you're going to be wearing when you go skating.
Yes.
Okay, and is the rental still something that happens, or is that, I mean, if somebody wants to just rent skates for an afternoon?
Yes. We do have rental skates. What we do is we rent many of our used skates, actually. So if you wanted to try the skate out, you could try the used skate on, and maybe you want to rent that out for the day, and we do offer that, yes.
Yeah, I guess it's really, this is the time of year when everybody's sort of thinking about it, but we're not quite there yet. But in not too many more weeks, we're going to be outdoor skating, and I guess indoor skating is kind of going on all the time. So you guys stay busy year-round, right?
We do, and skating's become more of a year-round type of adventure. And a lot of there's indoor rinks that are still open at this time, and then as we get closer to winter, of course, we look forward to that outdoor ice too.
Yeah, well, that whole Westchester Lagoon and Cheney Lake scene has become such a great community thing, and if you're out there on a sunny afternoon on the weekend, I mean, there'll be hundreds and hundreds of people out there, and I'm sure you guys are outfitting probably a lot of them or most of them.
Yes, we've got families that come in, and they look forward to those weekends getting on the lagoon, and with the burning barrels and just the family atmosphere, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. And how many years has Champion's Choice been in operation?
Gosh, we've been in business now for over 40 years now.
Yeah, and you're sort of the skate shop in town. I mean, it's where you go if you want to meet somebody who actually knows everything there is to know about hockey skates or whatever kind of skates you're looking for. And you're there in sort of the University Center at Old Seward and 36, if I remember correctly.
That is correct. Yes, we are.
All right, great. Well, thanks, Biz. Great having you on Outdoor Explorer today.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
All right, so that's all for today's show. My name is Charles Woolforth. Our producer is Eric Bork. Hannah Duro, who did such a great job of lining up our many guests today, is our assistant producer. And hopefully we'll have ice soon and we'll all be skating. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.